Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, a look at what else with the election coming in 25 days. But first, wish I was there. And this is a really good one. Tammy Baldwin and Leah Vukmir on the Me Too movement. The chairman of a study committee on alcohol enforcement has this warning: if that bottle of wine you open this weekend is shipped in from California, you owe state sales tax on it. Senator Janet Buley laments a lack of cultural consciousness in the legislature. The new president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO talks about her expectations if Tony Earl is elected governor, and Vice President Mike Pence is in Eau Claire for the Republican candidate, U.S. Senate, and Governor Scott Walker. Wish I was there.
What I think that the Me Too movement has done and said is that we need to speak our truths, we need to tell our stories, and we need to be heard. That means due process. That means due process on all sides. But it does mean that we have to create an environment and a country where it is okay for people to speak out and tell their truth.
I kind of have to take a deep breath when I hear Senator Baldwin talk about due process, because I believe it was very important for Dr. Ford to make her statements. And I also believe in the due process of Judge Kavanaugh. The Me Too movement is important, and it was cheapened by her actions and by the fact that she wouldn't even follow through on the due process of Judge Kavanaugh. These are important issues that must be covered, and both individuals should be given their time.
You have to be permitted by the state of Wisconsin to ship into the state. But nobody really checks on the permit.
Oh.
And it's very hard to enforce. So if you were able to get some wine in from a California vineyard and it didn't come with sales tax attached to it for Wisconsin, you are obligated as the purchaser to disclose that on your income tax report. I mean, you're not allowed to be shipping in a bottle of Jack Daniels or a bottle of wine or a bottle of vodka, but clearly that is going on.
There is a very big distinction, difference between school board members and administrators. One group is elected and the other one is hired. I would dare say we lack cultural competence in our own legislature. I will never forget the day in the hearing for Gogebic Taconite for the iron mine, when one member of that group that was hearing testimony turned to the other and said, "So do we really have to obey that treaty?"
We've already, you know, been in discussions with Tony Evers about these important issues. He's made it clear that he does not support the policies of Scott Walker in regards to public sector organized unions or private sector unions with these things. So we're going to be asking, and we have asked, that he restore all of the rights that have been taken away under Scott Walker. You know, restoring our reversing Act 10, prevailing wage, project labor agreements, child labor laws, the weakening of child labor laws, that should be reversed as well. So-called right to work. All of these things, but really even more in terms of making sure that we have good regulations or good laws here that can help working people.
You deserve to know, in Wisconsin, Senator Baldwin actually announced her opposition to Justice Kavanaugh the week he was nominated to the position. Senator Tammy Baldwin and the Democrats in the Senate have exchanged advice and consent with search and destroy. And that's why we need Wisconsin to elect Leah Vukmir to be your next United States Senator. So there was a day on the floor of the United States Senate that Senator Chuck Schumer said that he was getting tired or something he was getting frustrated with Mike Pence and those other Scott Walker Republicans in the United States Congress. That's what he called me. He called me a Scott Walker Republican. So I ran back to my office. We got out Twitter, and I said, Senator Schumer called me a Scott Walker Republican. Nobody said anything that nice about me for a long, long time.
And of course, I meant Tony Evers instead of Tony Earle, but turning into, okay, JR, first U.S. Senate debate between Senator Baldwin and Leah Vukmir. Mm-hmm. They hit a lot of issues. Healthcare is the number one issue, the polls show. They also talked on immigration and the Me Too movement, as we saw and as I was there. General impressions before we actually hear from a segment of the debate?
The reaction I got was that Leah Vukmir is much more aggressive in this debate than Tammy Baldwin, which is reflective of somebody who's down in the polls. And a lot of people panned Baldwin's performance. The problem for Vukmir is there aren't a lot of people who watched. I mean, I'm not getting rating numbers of, like, the debate, but a Monday night debate in October, how many undecided voters are tuning in to watch that hour, which you could argue they should be watching it, but how many people do? And that's the difficulty for Vukmir. These debates are really about, does somebody make a gaffe so significant that ends up in a TV ad? It's a reality of these things. So we have debates tonight, AG's race, Saturday night in the Senate race, Sunday in the AG race. I'm not looking for these to change the dynamic of the races. I'm looking, is there a big mistake that comes back to haunt somebody?
Well, J.R., just to follow up, why do you think Senator Baldwin was so deliberately subdued?
It's an excellent question. I'm trying to avoid making a mistake. I mean, that's really the fear, is that you make a mistake. And, oh, by the way, the print coverage of the debates aren't going to show you starting and stopping. They may comment about it, but you're not going to see that. You're not going to see it unless you're watching the debate or you're catching a TV snippet. They're going to have the best 30 seconds from each candidate, right? That's the way these things work.
Yeah.
So you're not going to see the overall performance. It's not like a presidential debate. I mean, like presidential debates, you've got millions of eyeballs glued to that TV, and you've got people live tweeting what's going on, like hundreds of them, if not thousands. I mean, there's a constant like attention. It's an hour and a half of drama. You don't have that same focus at a state level for a federal race.
And the Vukmir campaign put out how many instant tweets during the debate? 10 or 12.
And highlights. They're very happy with how she performed. You
right.
know, and you can see why, because she brought, you know, some fire there. But again, it's breaking through. That's the challenge for Vukmir. How do you break through to people who aren't paying attention?
Right. And State Senator Vukmir was today before the disabled veterans. Senator Baldwin will be speaking to the same group. But let's listen to what I think is the emotional heart of that first debate between the two U.S. Senate candidates, because healthcare does show up as number one and number two in the polls, and they talk about healthcare and then the very emotional, divisive issue of abortion. So let's listen to a segment from that debate.
I believe as a fundamental value that all Americans deserve affordable and quality health insurance. And the study that you cite actually shows that doing nothing would cost more. So Leah Vukmir's plans to repeal the Affordable Care Act and go back to the bad old days would actually be more costly, which is something that we have to focus on.
I want people to understand here what happens under Senator Baldwin's plan. I'm going to call it Baldwin Care, because under her plan, the Affordable Care Act goes away. Medicare goes away. Everything that we know about insurance goes away. TRICARE for our veterans goes away. We also get rid of private insurance. So she wants to completely turn our health care over to the government and not have any ability for us to have private insurance.
I support a woman's right to choose. I don't believe that government should interfere with a woman's health or whether or when she should have a child. I also believe that my opponent has been at the very extreme of this issue. She has supported legislation that would ban in vitro fertilization, that would ban access to some forms of contraception, and would ban stem cell research that is providing life-saving treatments and ultimately potentially cures.
You want to talk about extreme, Senator Baldwin? Extreme is voting for a partial birth abortion. It is the most disgusting thing that can happen, that the arms and legs of a baby are pulled out of their mother, the brain is sucked out. That is vile. And you talk about a woman's right to choose. It's a woman's right to kill her baby. It's wrong. That is extreme, Senator Baldwin. I will never forget as a young nurse holding a 24-week-old baby in my hands in a neonatal intensive care unit. And I saw that tiny heart beating so rapidly under that thin chest wall, and that life was trying to hang on in that neonatal intensive care unit, and we were working hard to save its life. And Tammy Baldwin would rip that life out of a mother just like that and snuff that life out. It's wrong.
Let's look at the new Charles Franklin poll from MU, and it showed Senator Baldwin 53% and Leah Vukmir 43%, a 10-point gap. Now, 1 month ago, she was up an additional point or two.
Which is statistically insignificant. And worth noting that in this poll, the sample last month was plus one Democratic. So that means that people who identify Democrats, there was a one-point advantage for them. This month, it's plus three Republican. So the poll shifted in its partisan makeup, the sample did, and you still had a 10-point gap. So why? Now, we also had a Marist poll.
Yeah, let's
Thursday
get into
afternoon.
That. That had NBC Marist poll.
14-point gap, I think.
It had Senator Baldwin at 54, and it had State Senator Vukmir at 40.
That one had a more Democratic sample than what the Marquette Law School poll had. But I don't think this is going to be a 14-point race come Election Day. This more is a reflection of the advantage Baldwin's had on the air in terms of TV ads and familiarity than what Vukmir's been able to do so far.
Okay. Now let's turn to the latest MU poll, Charles Franklin poll on the governor. And this was intriguing, JR, because it's at direct variance with the NBC Marist poll. The poll released this week by MU, governor 47%, Democrat Tony Evers 46%, but the margin of error is 3.9. So which tired old phrase, dead heat.
About even. It's not a lead.
Too close to call.
That one drives me crazy.
Yeah, right.
1 point is not a lead in polling. Oh,
but what's the takeaway? Some momentum shift to the governor in the wake of what, 24, 25, 26 ads?
But again, I think it's 28.
28.
But if you look, or 27, somewhere around there. But if you look.
I'm glad you
count. That sample shift of 4 points and the result shift of 5 points. So is there a correlation? Maybe. If you go drill down into independents, there was a shift with those guys. But the margin of error with independents is plus or minus 7 points, Charles told me.
7 points.
So even the shifts that you saw are on the edge of being statistically significant. So it's hard to say for sure. And this is the other thing. Like, these polls have different methodology of how you identify a likely voter. Mm-hmm. The Marquette model is more that they call and ask you questions to see if you are likely to vote. Others use what's called a voter file. People who, like, they look at who's voting or who's voted, I should say, and pull from that. Your pluses and minuses, everything that you do. The bottom line with the Marquette poll is, traditionally, the last one he does, which will be last week of October, we'll see it, has been the best one. Things move around. The enthusiasm gap shrunk in this last poll.
Yeah.
This poll also happened to be in the field right on the time of the Kavanaugh confirmation
October
vote.
October 3 through 7, excuse me.
So the cloture vote on Friday, the final vote on Saturday, those things were going on. How did that impact this poll? Did that maybe account for the shift in the partisan sample? Maybe. Does that shift last? Maybe. But watch the last Marquette poll. That's traditionally been the one that's kind of been the closest to the final results.
Now let's talk about the NBC Marist poll, because it showed Tony Evers 53%, Governor Walker 43%, a 10 percentage point gap. But then when you throw in the Libertarian candidates and the Green Party candidate, Tony Evers 50%, Governor Walker 42%, Libertarian 3, and the Green Party candidate 2. So you had Charles saying it's a dead heat, 47-46, and then you had Maris saying clear lead for Tony Evers. Takeaways?
Again, you know, the different methodology, the different samples. I think the NBC pollsters noted that the people who are going to vote for Walker, like, have usually high, like, passion to vote for Walker.
Yeah.
That might account for some of the different, all kinds of reasons why it might be different. But what's telling to me is, talking to Democrats all week long before the poll was out, they kept saying it's going to be a close race. It is a close race right now. So yeah. They weren't saying 10 points and talking to the most optimistic Democrats. Now, if you look at the Marquette poll and the sample, what's it going to look like compared to Election Day? And Democrats feel like if you're telling them that it's a plus one Republican model, mm-hmm. and they're about even with Governor Walker, mm-hmm. they feel like they're in good shape.
Good shape.
The Republican answer is this shows momentum for Governor Walker from where it was a month ago. And oh, by the way, they shifted from a message about teachers and this teacher Milton and porn to, have they mentioned that in 3 weeks?
No.
Not really. It's all been about taxes. Property taxes, gas taxes, taxes on farmers. It's all about taxes right now. Talking to Republicans outside the Walker campaign, they like that message better. They think it resonates. It, one, ignites the base. They remember what they don't like about Democrats being in charge, the things that they feel good about that Walker's done. And two, it's a better message to them, to independents. It also, people tell me, undercuts the claim I heard for weeks that this claim about this teacher watching porn at school was like a knockout punch for Evers. It's going to disqualify him as a candidate. They spent 2.5-3 weeks on that message, and it didn't work. That's the consensus of people I talked to from both sides of the aisle. But now maybe they found one that will. The question is, does this keep moving people? Does it work until Election Day? Was this a reflection of a Kavanaugh bump? Is that a temporary sugar high for conservatives? And now that the fight is over, it'll calm back down. And oh, by the way, we have a lot of rural voters in Wisconsin, and there's a thought that it's not necessarily the Kavanaugh fight that really might change things mm-hmm. for Election Day. It's the rural voter who has a cultural issue with some Democrats and says, you know what, I'm not happy with the way things are going right now, but when I'm seeing these protests in Washington, D.C., and seeing Eric Holder talking about when they go low, we kick them, which may be just kind of like hyperbole, but still is language that Republicans can use, it reminds these voters of, I'm not there with Democrats on certain things.
Yeah,
so maybe that shifts the rural voters' thinking, or even if that voter's not happy about, I mean, again, this is all theoretical right now. Maybe they're going, you know what, there's something I'm not really happy about the Democrats either. What am I going to do now come Election Day?
Yeah, and a programming note, I'm scheduled to interview Tony Evers on Monday, so watch for that interview. But Mr. Evers returned to the health care issue this week with his Pay Less for Rx plan, which would create a drug review panel that would monitor price increases and fine violators. That would be a big change, and refund overpayments. So he would create some type of new, I'm going to use the term, the B word, bureaucracy to do this. He would implement a state-run program allowing drugs from Canadian pharmacies. He would prohibit gag clauses, stopping pharmacists from mentioning cheaper options. And just two more points. He would require drug companies to report production costs, profits, and rebates. And finally, he would partner with other states to maximize bulk purchases, negotiate prices. Him playing offense, you impressed?
Oh, well, I mean, it's not about whether I'm impressed, it's about how it dovetails with the message on healthcare. Two ads out this week with women accusing Scott Walker of playing politics with healthcare. It's time for a change.
Republican Representative Mary Felskowski,
who cancer survivor.
Cancer survivor twice, reoccurrence of breast cancer.
Accusing Tony Evers of lying about Governor Walker and also playing politics with healthcare. This shows you that healthcare is probably the dominant issue in this election. And Democrats keep talking about how they feel like they're on solid ground for the first time in 8 or 9 years on the issue, because it was, for a long, it was defense about Obamacare. Now they feel like it's Republicans trying to take away these things that you like about the Affordable Care Act, the protections for pre-existing conditions, the having your kid on your health care till he's 26 or she's 26. Those kinds of things are positives. And they feel like Democrats, the fight over the repeal last summer, that kind of shifted the dynamic to put the ball in their court on this. Now, Republicans are trying to fight back about this, right? I mean, they're trying to push back on this, that no, these guys want to run your health care. The new line in the Senate debate has been about Leah Vukmir talking about how Tammy Baldwin wants to take over everything and put government in charge of everything that they do.
At a cost of $32 trillion, which Senator Baldwin says that overstates it, given what we're spending now. So it's just interesting. Okay, new topic. I was intrigued. This was the first time I've seen numbers, Wisconsin residents on the Kavanaugh. Now, he's now Justice Kavanaugh, but where did Wisconsin voters land on this? And so Mr. Franklin's poll shows us that, and we're going to put that up now. JR, let's just look with independent women, 2-1, unfavorable. Democratic women, no surprise there, 80% unfavorable. Then we look at independent men, okay, let's go back to Democratic women. 1 in 4 had no opinion, okay? Then we look at Republican women, We had 68% favorable, 10% unfavorable, but you had 1 in 5, no opinion or did not know. So I find this interesting in terms of documenting the gap, the lack of support for now Justice Kavanaugh among Wisconsin women. What's your takeaway?
Well, you'll recall that Republican women still have a favorable opinion of him, so there's a partisan divide in what's going on. The questions are, like, is this a reflection of how people feel about President Trump in some ways? When President Trump has talked about that women love Kavanaugh and they're the ones worried about their sons and their brothers and et cetera, he's probably talking about this demographic of women. There's also a question of, if there's a Kavanaugh bump enthusiasm for Republicans, is there also one for independent Democratic women, even some Republican-leaning women, who are unhappy about Republicans in Washington, D.C., are now going to be more incensed about what's going on and turn out? I mean, it's all right now theory. Like, I mean, keep stressing, it's all theory right now. We'll find out, like, November 7th, we can start going through the numbers and figure out what actually happened. But if you look at places like the 23rd Assembly District, which is Jim Ott of Mequon, a Republican, the open 14th Assembly District, which is a Republican-held seat right now, they're Milwaukee suburbs, and Republicans are focusing on those seats, which traditionally have been pretty good performers for them, because they're the suburban demographic that is abandoning the Republican Party.
You're talking
nationally.
About the Coinga Hensie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one.
Well, no, that's the Senate seat. The Assembly seat is Matt Adamczyk, who's a state treasurer, and Robin Vining.
Okay.
But the bottom line is that those are suburban seats that you might see this dynamic at play, where it looks like college-educated suburban women are not happy with Republicans. That's what we see in the polls.
That's why I was
How'd that play out?
That's why I was most intrigued at the breakouts. Independent women, almost 2-1. Independent women in Wisconsin, almost 2-1. Unfavorable for now Justice Kavanaugh.
Hmm?
Well, as you mentioned last week, the number, there's a staggering number of school district referendums that are on the ballot on November 6th. They total 1.68 billion. Eight of those referendums are for more than $50 million. Two of them are for more than $100 million. Middleton Cross Plains, 138.9. Wauwatosa, 124.9. And there are dozens, totaling 1.68 billion. And you talked about this last week. What are we seeing? Good times here? What?
Oh, it's a dynamic where people want to invest in schools. This is exactly why Governor Walker put the $600-some million into his budget to boost K-12 education spending, because he saw the writing on the wall that voters didn't want to hold property taxes low anymore, and more than they wanted to invest in their schools, because they're seeing things they don't like. So he's trying to address that. He talks about it regularly on the campaign trail, a record investment in education, which Democrats say, well, not if you look at inflation, but Governor Walker talks about the investment in education, how schools are doing. This is a big part of what he's trying to put out there, because of this very dynamic of voters going to the polls and raising their own property taxes.
Well, and the Republicans say, what's wrong about asking voters to raise their own property taxes and part with the revenue limits and get them to do that? I'm going to get a chance, my wife and I, to vote on the $57 million Monona Grove initiative. That's kind of, we'll make a decision, do we want to raise our property taxes? Anyway, it's just intriguing. And go ahead.
One of the complaints has been that when you go to a referendum system, you create haves and have-nots. You have certain districts more likely to invest in their schools than others.
You'll never pass a referendum in MPS is basically what you're saying.
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
So what happens then? And the two-thirds funding formula, it seemed like there was an effort, and you were here, I wasn't, but the whole idea was that you create equal opportunity for education, right? We're all going to have a chance for great schools. Will you create inequity at some point when you have this referendum system?
Well, and this goes back to the debate in how did the governor boost state spending and K-12 by $630 million over the 2 years? He did it per pupil, 200 and 204, year two. And they said that doesn't reflect the disparities, the spending disparities, the low spending districts, the poor districts, and the higher spending districts. That's just interesting. Okay, information from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. The referendum so far this year have passed at a rate of 85%. That's January through the end of September. And in 2016, they passed at a rate of 79%. I asked Jason Stein, the research director the significance of the 1.68 and a billion in referendums that are up. This year could be the biggest on record for dollar value of successful school referenda in Wisconsin going back to the 1990s. The factors that appear to influence recent school referenda include the health of the economy, local school district enrollments, infrastructure, and an apparent shift in voter attitudes about school budgets and property taxes. It's just an interesting phenomenon, and it's a big issue in the race for governor, mm-hmm. right?
I'll get that in a second.
Yeah. Okay, go. Stock report.
So this week, rising, we had transgender state employees recall that there were employees that were successful mm-hmm. in suing that they should have had gender reassignment surgery covered. They now won an $800,000, nearly $800,000 judgment after a judge.
How many employees were we talking? Two?
I think it was two.
Two?
So there's a big win for them on that front. Remember that this comes after state board that controls state employees' health care nearly voted to cover these surgeries going forward, struck down a previous exclusion to these benefits. So, yep. You know, it's been a good run for them.
Okay. And mixed.
So taxes. So this is what we're talking
here we
about.
Go. Yes.
Look at Marquette, all right? Here is, and it's an age-old dilemma. Do you want to pay for the services or have the service? You know, how do you want to do this, right? Overall, in Marquette, 51% of registered voters rather pay higher taxes and have government provide more services than the 42% that want lower taxes and fewer services. Okay. But now drill down a little bit. First off, that question when asked for the first time in 2012, I think it was, January, it was 41 higher taxes, 50% keeping lower taxes, or lower taxes and lower services. Drill down. Schools, 57% rather increase money spending on schools mm-hmm. and keep their taxes low. Mm-hmm. 37% want to keep their property taxes low. The gas tax, however, 61% more important to keep the gas taxes and vehicle registration fees where they are now, versus 32% who want to raise the gas tax, register fees, and spend more on roads and highways.
Which I find interesting because our gas tax and registration fees have not been increased since 2006 and 2008, mm-hmm. respectively. Excuse me, go ahead.
So, and in the governor's race, you have education funding a major issue. Again, Governor Walker saying record investment, Democrats saying not according to inflation, you cut the heck out of schools in your first budget, and they go back and forth and round. What are you seeing a lot in ads anymore from Governor Walker? Property taxes, gas taxes. Yep. The gas tax question hinges on the first day after the primary, Tony was asked, well, Governor Walker says you want to raise the gas tax by a dollar. And he said, well, everything's on the table. Later on that day, he said, his campaign said, no, that's not going to happen. And he's been saying ever since then, we're going to find a solution, but I won't raise gas tax a dollar. Well, how much are you going to raise it? Well, until you give a number, it opens a door to Walker and Republicans to keep hammering on, it could be a dollar, it could be a dollar, it could be a dollar.
Now, I better make a note to ask that question of Tony on Monday. Thank you very much.
Scott Walker has got an ad that's going to run on the screens. Some gas pumps have, like, they run ads while you're pumping your gas.
Yes.
He has an ad now
Go ahead.
Which is not in my count, by the way, of the 20-some ads he's run. It's a digital one. But anyway, it's an ad running on gas pumps about, hey, he knocks on the glass, you know, Tony wants to raise your gas tax as much as, raise your gas tax. He's trying to harp on this issue to try and get those swing voters who care about their pocketbook. That's a driving thing for them to reach them. You know, it's a unique way to go after people.
I didn't know that. Yeah. wow. So. Fascinating mix. Okay, falling.
So Leah Vukmir, so we talked about a little bit with the debate and the poll that the issue was, one, good performance in the debate, people aren't really watching, numbers aren't good in the polls. And oh, by the way, Tammy Baldwin raised $6 million in the third quarter, three-month period. Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't seen Leah's fundraising numbers yet. They're due next week, I believe. But Baldwin is raising a record amount each quarter. That has given her an advantage on the air, which if you look at the Marquette numbers, and I want to stress, you know, as much as I like Marquette, it's not infallible, but what we're seeing in those numbers are that Leah Vukmir is upside down with the voters. They have an overall negative view of her, more have a negative view than a positive view. That seems to be a reflection of this ad disparity where Baldwin's hitting on healthcare, constantly on healthcare. That's been a major issue that Baldwin's focused on. That's making it hard for Vukmir to break through. Now, again, the Marquette numbers, you see some room for growth. Walker's at 87% with likely voters who are Republicans. Vukmir at 83, so you can kind of close some gap that way. Independents are a problem for her. In the end, I don't think you're going to have a 1 or 2 point governor's race and a 10-point Senate race. This is going to be a tighter race than 10 points. My question is, can Scott Walker reach a number if he were to win? Big if. If Scott Walker wins, can you reach a number that it pulls Vukmir across the finish line. Right now, looking at the polls, it looks more likely that Baldwin hits a number that helps Tony Evers, right? My question has been for weeks to people I talked to them, what is that magic number? Is it 52%, 53, 54? Where is it? Because I can see a 52 on one race and a 49 point whatever on the other that they both win. I can't see 54 and 50. That's a tougher one to see, and people I talk to you are the same way.
Okay.
So where is that path? Where is that sweet spot? Vukmir, her hope may be that Walker does well, and I talk about that cultural thing, rural voters, that what's happening isn't just a temporary bump with Kavanaugh, but there's a shift that those folks kind of come home to the Republican Party and help her out. Maybe that's there. But we're also not seeing outside groups come in, or independent groups play heavily here. A new ad from Restoration PAC started this week. I haven't got numbers yet of how much they're spending on it. But interestingly enough, it features Kevin Nicholson, who was our one-time rival in the Senate primary. It features Kevin a lot, by the way, hitting Tammy Baldwin, and the very end mentioning a vote for Leah Vukmir, and you should too. The question I've gotten from some people is, well, is that really about helping Leah, or is there maybe a little bit of like a bump for Kevin to set him up, you know, remind people about who he is, because we think he's going to run again someday.
Okay, we're almost out of time, but just a footnote. I get to moderate next Tuesday before the Milwaukee Rotary a Schimmel Call debate. And let's talk about the newest numbers. Schimmel 47, Call 43. What would you expect both in the debate tonight and then the forum next Tuesday that I'm going to be a part of at the Milwaukee Rotary?
Brad Schimmel is going to say that Josh Call, who's a former federal prosecutor in Baltimore, has never prosecuted a case in Wisconsin ever, not in any way, shape, or form. Which is true, because he's a prosecutor in another state. Josh Call is going to talk about rape kits and talk about how Brad Schimmel wants to take away your health care coverage to the Affordable Care Act because he's suing to overturn them. Now, I'm not saying either of you is correct or great, but that's what you're probably going to hear from both of them.
And you can watch the coverage of that forum on Wisconsin Eye. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for October 12.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.